Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan, and I am an alcoholic.
Hello, Morgan.
Hello, everybody. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs out there to the left. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing Step 4, Part 2. Please welcome our panel this evening, Karen and Donald. I will read the first paragraph on page 67. And then the panel will share for a few minutes on each reading. All right. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. I forgot to figure out which one of y'all wants to go first.
Karen.
My name's Karen. I'm an alcoholic.
Karen.
I thought about fear, and I was thinking about, I was born a fairly happy person, and I was not a fearful person. When I started drinking alcoholically, and that took me a while, I didn't start drinking till I was about 18, which meant that I came into these rooms maturely, shall I say. As my addiction took over, I found that I was getting more fearful of all sorts of things in ways that had never happened to me before, in my real self. I like to think today I'm restored to my real self through this program and through my higher power. But when I was in the throes of my addiction, I mean, I would do weird things. I'd be in a shopping area and I'd see someone I know and I'd duck behind a counter so they wouldn't see me. It was like, what? I look back on that and I think, what was that about? Because it wasn't like, I don't know what I was afraid of. Everything began to be turned upside down. Fear is something that can change our hearts. We get fearful for our children, our spouses, and then what I want to do when I get fearful is I want to control things. And that never works very well because I'm not in control anyway. And I forget about what other people are supposed to be doing. Fear is all of our emotions are, very natural. We're born with it. Healthy fear, there's nothing wrong with it. As addicted people, the fear turns into something really ugly and inappropriate most of the times. So I found that that was one of the things when I was reading this that I'd forgotten how fearful I became towards the end of my drinking. And it took several years to restore me back to the happy person that I feel like I was always born to be. Thanks.
Thank you. Donald Smith, alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. So I'm getting ready to celebrate an anniversary. Thank you very much. My home group is the West End Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday nights. We have a book study and a discussion meeting. Come join us if you'd like. 8 o'clock? That's 8 o'clock. Let me start with this. First of all, I want to thank David for asking me to come and fill in the slot. Apparently they didn't have anybody, so he called me last week, so that's why you see me again. I will say this. This inventory and this part of the book, to me, made just an incredible impact on my life. When I finally really understood what it means when it says an evil and corroding thread, the fabric of my existence is shot through with it. It sets in motion trains of circumstances which brought me misfortune, which I felt I didn't deserve. I always feel I don't deserve misfortune. It's like the way it is. I didn't do that. So why is that? When we do the inventory, the resentment inventory, when I'm doing the resentment inventory, I'm pulling out all these fears that I have back behind. Let me back up and say this. If you look on page 64, it says liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down the causes and conditions. And it seems to me that when I'm doing the fourth column part of the inventory, I'm examining the conditions. What does that mean? It's me. It's the condition. Remember that song, What Condition My Condition Is In? You remember that song?
Yeah, that's a good
one. You remember that one? It's a Kenny Rogers song from when he was a hippie. I bring it up because, as an alcoholic, for me, alcoholism is a condition. It's who I am as a person. When I first got sober, I didn't think I had any fears. I'm thinking, I did anything, I went anywhere, I didn't care about nothing. I did what I wanted to do, I was going, I had no fear of nothing. I would drive drunk, I would go to court drunk, whatever it was, I didn't care. So to me, I had no fears whatsoever. And then when I started getting sober, I started realizing that I had a ton of fears, just a ton of them, all stacked up. And I was hiding behind being cocky. I was hiding behind drinking and my attitude was, if I said this, you won't know who I am. So I was opposite of the person that I was. That was one of the life skills I learned as an alcoholic, drinking, active alcoholic. So I get here and I do this and I start learning how to do this. And I did all those fear inventories, you know, I'm fearful of this. I can't remember, it's been a long time since I did them, so I can't give you the exact ones, but I had a ton of them that I pulled out of my inventory. Things like if I was mad at an employer, I didn't want to lose a job, these surface things. It says in some of our literature that fear is generated by the fact that we don't want to lose something we have, or we don't want to, we want to get something we don't have. And that's all about control. But really, that's early in my sobriety I learned that. It wasn't until much later, I must have been 10 or 15, maybe 10 years sober, when I was having this reoccurring thing. I called it anxiety. I said, I got all this anxiety. And I called my sponsor, I said, I got this anxiety. And he laughed at me. And he says, Donald, you have a $10 word for a four-letter problem. And I didn't know what he was talking about. You know, I said, what? And he basically laughed again. He said, call me, think about it, and call me back tomorrow. He hung up on me. So, you know, I thought about him more than that thought for a long time. But as this thing went on, I came to realize I had to actually look at what was going on with me. And that's my condition. My condition is that I'm fearful. And that's when I remembered when I went back in my life and remembered that, you know, when I was 7, 8, 9 years old, I was afraid of everything. I liked my family, wasn't afraid of that, but going to elementary school, going to Boy Scouts, doing stuff out, that stuff terrified me. And I had totally forgotten it. And when I started drinking, that stuff started subsiding, and I kind of circumvented it into other things. And the other thing, the other key for me was, when I first got sober, they used to say, "So, Donald, why were you drinking?" And I'd had 100 reasons. She left me. She stayed. You know, I lost the job. I got the job. You know, all these things, all these reasons I thought I had. And they said, well, no, none of that is true. That's all lies you're telling yourself. The real reason that you're drinking is that you're an alcoholic. That's what alcoholics do. They drink. Makes sense? But I had to really internalize that. And then I heard someone say that bottles are only symptoms, symbols. We had to get down to the causes and effects. And if the bottle is a symbol, then this fear thing, if I think that I have fear because of something, that's a symbol of something. That's an indicator that I'm getting close to what my alcoholism really is. Because if the book says that the fabric of my existence is shot through with it, then that's pretty fundamental. And I have to look at that to understand what kind of alcoholic I am and where this stuff comes from. And as Karen said, it's natural. It comes to everybody. But people like me, I don't deal with it the way other people do. I deal with it the way I want to deal with it, and that is I drink because I love drinking. When I start, I don't stop. Right? And when I try to stop, I can't stay stopped. And part of that is that it kind of relieves that fear or circumvents it or sidetracks it or does something. And so I had to do inventory on the fear. And when I did, my life completely changed. Not outside, but the insides. That anxiety that I had never came back once I did a real good inventory, and then I did steps 5 and 6 and 7. It was an amazing thing. And so I just say this one little quick thing. Over also on page 64, it talks about that when we do inventory, we inventory people, institutions, and principles. And I don't know about you, but for a long time, I would get up, I would say things to myself. You ever turn off the radio in your car and listen to yourself talk to yourself? And hear all that crazy crap and tell yourself how horrible you are? That's all self-generated fear. Those are lies that you're telling yourself about who you are. It has nothing to do with who you are. If you took the time to inventory that and ran that through the fear portion of this book, you might find it helpful, because I'm telling myself things that are not true. All right? And my condition is I am by nature dishonest, selfish, self-seeking, and fearful. And those are not pleasant things to be. But if I understand that I know who I am, and I'm free, because I can give that stuff to God. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. The next reading is on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
I wanted to say one thing that I was thinking about the last couple of weeks, I guess, is that I would not begin to do this step without having a sponsor, somebody to get me started. Don't just get the big book, read that, and think you're going to get it. You got to talk about this with your sponsor. And also, it has been my experience, I've been around a few 24 hours. People that don't take their fourth step just don't get very far. It's a missing piece in our 12-step program. You have to begin to face yourself, and face yourself honestly, something that we could not do when we're stuck with our heads in the bottle. Impossible. I mean, we justified everything. I think we have a talent for rationalization. Honestly, I mean, my husband would say, how'd you come up with that? And it's like, it's a gift. You know, I can rationalize anything to get what I want. Because our alcoholism leads us down the road to self-centeredness at the extreme. Towards the end of my drinking, it was all about me, all about me. I've told many parents who are upset with their kids get in trouble and they're all messed up, and why would he do that to me, husbands, wives, why would he do that to me? We're not doing it to you. We really, when we're drinking like this, we don't care about you. I mean, that's the God's honest truth. When I was at the worst, I didn't care about any of them. I have a wonderful family today. I have a husband. I've been married 55 years. I've got two great kids, six grandchildren, and a new great-grandson. But I wouldn't have any of that if I hadn't stopped drinking. I was that close to losing all of it. And it wasn't until I sobered up that I came to the place of understanding that I had not cared about any of them. I'd lost so many things through this disease. I could not have done this without AA and the people in these rooms first. I was a churchgoer, still am, but when I first came in, I did not believe that God cared for me anymore. I remember going, I'm Episcopalian, and I went to a priest about a year before I sobered up, and we did a confession. And I mumbled around about things, and of course I never mentioned alcoholism because I wasn't going to say that, for gosh sakes. And, you know, he kept trying to pull something out, and it just wasn't there. It was the most frustrating confession. I'm sure he's heard other more frustrating, but we couldn't get past whatever it was, and I know now it's my alcoholism. It couldn't get past my alcoholism because I couldn't be honest. I couldn't say my truth. Today, I can say my truth. And even after all these years that I've been in the program, I still do things, ask my husband, that I have to say, geez, I'm sorry I did that. I have to be able to admit who I am. Guilt and shame, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Guilt and shame, the gift that keeps on giving. If we can't get out of the guilt and shame through taking our fourth, fifth, working with others in the program, we're going to go back out there. We are going to go back out there. There's got to be a level of a breakthrough for you in understanding what this disease has done to you, what it's done to everybody else, but know that you're not condemned. There is a life. When we get into this program and we can break that crushing chain of alcoholism, we can know a freedom that we've never known before. And what comes with that freedom for me is I can laugh at myself these days. I can tell on myself. I can call my sponsor and say, oh my God, I did it again, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, yeah. And I'm okay. I can go back out there and be a real person again. I can listen to what you're saying. I can care for you, really care for you, instead of, I don't really give a shit, but I'm just listening. No, I don't have to do that today. I can be really honest with you. And when I'm talking to somebody and I'm listening to someone that I'm sponsoring, I can really get there with them. That's something I was totally unable to do when I was drinking. The fourth step is the beginning of our honestly opening up ourselves, taking a good hard look at who we have become, not who we are. You're going to get back to being who you are. You're not meant to have your head stuck in a bottle. That isn't really who we are. I'm never going to change being an alcoholic. I'm always going to be an alcoholic. I had someone ask me the other day, if I had a week to live, would I go out drinking? What? No. Can you imagine the tombstone? And here she was, and her last week on earth, she drank. It's like, what? No. Mm-mm. I want to go to my grave sober. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Karen. You know that wherever four Episcopalians gather, you'll always find a fifth. Couldn't pass it up. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's also true of Catholics, Lutherans.
Presbyterians.
I don't know about Presbyterians.
I do.
And certainly not Baptists. But. In any event, let's see. You know, one of the hardest things I've ever had to do when I worked this step, or any of these steps, if we talk about fear, is finding the better footing, the better way of life, which is I'm on a different basis, trusting and relying upon God, an infinite God, rather than my finite self. And that really took me a long time to get to, because I am, you know, I like... probably everybody in this room is raised this way. You know, we want to take control of our own lives. We're supposed to be doing stuff. We're supposed to make plans and get things done. And if you can't do it, then you manipulate your way into it. You do all these things trying to control things, trying to get what you want. And that's what I tried to do. That was my MO. That's what I like to do. I mean, I love manipulating people. It was one of my highlight of my day sometimes to do that. But this whole process is for me to step back and learn how to give to life rather than take away from life. And I can't learn how to do that if I'm thinking I'm infinite, that I have all the power. And so having to come to grips with this finite idea always was kind of hard for me initially. But then it says, and so you know, like it says in How It Works, we have progress rather than perfection. So this sentence says, just to the extent that we do as he think he would have us and rely, humbly rely upon him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? So a couple things. First of all, it's the extent that you do that. So not you can't do it perfectly. I don't do it perfectly. I do it as much as I can. I pray about it in the morning. I try to let God. I really was in a bad frame of mind this morning. Woke up at 3:00 with all this stuff going on in my head. I got up at 4:00. I had all this stuff to do. And before I got started on it, though, I did my prayers and meditation, and I read the daily reflection. And there was something in there that just clicked. And I gave up, and I had a great day. And nothing in the day changed. My attitude in the day changed. How I approached the day, I slowed down. I did things I was supposed to do. And I got things done, and what I didn't get done, I can do tomorrow. How did I do that? I had to ask God for the power to do that. I can't do it. I don't have any clue how to do that well on my own. If I'm doing my best thing, I'm planning, I'm manipulating, I'm moving, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So I have to learn how to the extent that I do that. So I want to be able to match anything, excitement with serenity. I want to match calamity with serenity. I want to match boredom with serenity. Because for me, being in that space is the best place I can be. And I don't know how to do that unless I practice the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my daily life, that I have a sponsor, that I have a home group, I do the things I'm supposed to be doing. And I learned to do that by coming here and listening to people and actually trying to do it, working at it. It takes work. Sometimes it's not hard. Sometimes it's very hard, and sometimes it's not hard. Sometimes I get up, I can't wait to go do my meditation and prayer. I had such a good feeling about it. Other times I can't, I don't want to, I won't do it, I got too much to do. All right, so I wrote a little note, how do I do this? How do I enable this thing? And I hope I just told you that that's how my thing is. Now, the other two things is men of courage. I thought that courage meant not to have fear, the absence of fear. But in fact, it means that you're doing the thing you're supposed to do in spite of the fear. And that is, to me, that is, you know, that tells me from a normal standpoint, we all have fear. We wouldn't be human beings. We would be psychopaths if we didn't have fear. I'd be a sociopath. Nothing bothers me. I'm fine. I don't have to feel about nothing. Well, either you're lying or you're a sociopath. I mean, you're a psychopath or a sociopath. No, anyway. The point being that everybody has it. And this step helps me to further develop courage. And I develop that courage by relying on God, right? I don't have courage in myself. I've proven to myself over and over again that I can't stop myself from drinking. I can't live my life the way I'd like to live it unless I have a God of my understanding in my life. So I had to go to this meeting once, and I was afraid to go because I knew it was going to be all this anger, people yelling and stuff, you know. And I used to love conflict. Everybody like conflict? You know, I love conflict drinking, and I thought I liked it when I was sober. you know. But I was really afraid, and I had just gotten this new sponsor, and I called him on the phone, and he goes, you got the big book with you? I said, yeah. He said, go to page 68 and read the fear prayer. I said, what the hell is the fear prayer? And he says, go, and he told me the paragraph and look at the last. And I looked at it and it says, we ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Not what we are, not what we used to be, but what I am to be. So it's, to me, it's the most forward-looking, positive, practical thing I can ever think of. I always said that this program is spiritual in nature, but it's also very practical. So I have this fear, and I'm asking God to remove it, because clearly I can't get rid of it myself, right? I don't know how to do that. Do any of you all know how to get rid of your fears? You know, you get up in the morning and you ask this question. Do you get up in the morning and go, well, this is the way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Right? You do that over and over again every morning. You get up and say, well, this is the way it is. I'm going to have to be like this. I'm going to have to stay like this feeling inside. This, you know, whatever that feeling is. And I told my sponsor that once, and he goes, he was a crusty old underwater demolition guy. Remember those guys?
Yeah.
They were precursors to Navy SEALs. He was in Vietnam, a UDT guy. A little short little fart. He says to me, well, I forgot, where was I? See, age. Hang on a minute. Oh shit, I forgot where I was. Oh yeah, I forgot, thank you. So I said, you know, I feel this way all the time. And he goes, well, Donald, he says, that's called alcoholism. And if there's something, and if you believe we have a program that cures alcoholism or that addresses alcoholism, you should try it. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I wasn't doing the steps, and I wasn't doing certain things. So try it. Try this. What you're feeling, and if you're sitting in this room, and you get up in the morning, and you look at you, and you say, this is the best I'm going to feel the rest of my life. I'm going to have to go through this. Those are principles you tell in your life, yourself, and their lives. This program, that's alcoholism, and either we have a program for it or we don't. So if you don't think we do, then you know, go drink. Walk out and go drink. Or even worse, live miserably for 30 years. I don't care, right? But if you want to get better, come talk to people in this room that know how to do that. And one of the ways that I did this is I get up every morning and I say this prayer every morning, because my life is chock full of that stuff. It comes out of nowhere and it just pops up, right? So when I started doing that on a daily basis, it doesn't come around anymore. I don't get visitations from fear like I used to. I did this morning and I knew what I had to do. Right, to do some inventory. Self-examination is not something alcoholics even know how to do, much less go to as my first stop, right? I always wait for a while, talk to somebody else, go get some sugar, whatever, you know, get a cup of coffee. You know, I'll go to the gym, I'll work it off. You know. But inventory? Nah. I can't tell you how many people I sponsor. I tell them, you ever need to write inventory, then we come over and talk to me. They stop calling.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to do it. So I don't talk to them until they talk to themselves. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. The next reading is on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us on a straight peppered diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
Yes, when I was asked to speak on fear and sex, it was like, oh, great, okay. Those are good topics. As I mentioned before, fear is a very natural instinct. So is sex is a very natural instinct. Where I think it all goes bad is when sex becomes your pure selfishness of sex, where you're actually hurting other people and you have no care about them. That's when I think we start getting into problems. I found that the more my drinking increased, the more it was like you can never get enough. All I ever want is just a little bit more. Huh? Always, though, it's always like that. It's just, okay, I get all of this. My husband to this day still talks about it. He'll buy me something and it's like, and then you still have to get, I've got to get the matching necklace to go with the top that he bought me. It's like never enough. And I've come to understand that about myself, and I've come to understand that's part of our addiction process. We give up alcohol and then we're going to find some other addiction, trust me. For me, it was credit cards. Boy, I mean, you know, I wasn't drinking, but damn, I was racking up those credit cards. We gotta have something all the time. We're at these insatiable people. It takes a long time to get that all settled. Sex can go that exact same way. What can be a beautiful, natural experience in life, and it is, and done the right way between two caring people, it's beautiful. When all of a sudden one person has got to get their needs met over someone else, this is when all of a sudden it turns sour. And when sex alone, and it doesn't matter who it's with, you really start getting into issues. So it's one of the most beautiful parts of us as human beings. It is also, I think, one of the more dangerous things, problems with sex in our lives as human beings. I think that there are an awful lot of families, lives, friends, people that are hurt by sex problems, cheating on a spouse, just running off doing your thing because you're not good enough, you're not giving me what I want. See that insatiable thing. These are part of the truths about ourselves that we have to look at. And this is a particularly difficult topic to be doing, and you don't want to be doing this by yourself. You need to be with a sponsor. You're going to have to write this down, but the more truthful you are about how you've been, what you've been doing, who have you hurt in the process, if you're getting satisfied, your satisfaction, never mind theirs. And when you can begin to at least tell a thread of that to another human being, you're going to begin to open the door for beginning to take a look at yourself and say, oh, I do that. When we can see and say who we are, something else can happen. And that this is with God's help, with AA and sponsors and people like us. We can begin to change our minds. When we can begin to straighten out that brain of ours, the hamster brain that's going round and round and round and never seems to stop, when we can begin to change our minds, middle of the day, we can change the behavior that we have gotten stuck with early in the morning. Say, well, it's going to be one of those days. I learned after I started to sober up that at 10 o'clock in the morning, I could maybe have a different attitude. I could actually change midday. I didn't have to wait till 5 days later, hanging on to a resentment. I mean, really, I began to find just a little freedom in that. Because once I was able to admit some things about myself, then I could admit them to myself and say, well, maybe what about this? Or stop, or just say stop. But I couldn't do that before I walked in these rooms. Absolutely not. Alcohol had completely consumed me. And when I can begin to be honest about my life and where it's taken me, and so much of this is a natural part of every human being. We don't have to end up carrying shame around about it. We do have to make changes, and we do have to start admitting who we are and where we've been and what we've been doing. And there is a moment, and there is always a moment, if you stay sober, that you will be able to make that change and change your mind. You will be able to do that. And you'll have a moment in these rooms working with another alcoholic where you'll go, oh my, wow, something just happened there. Not only for them, but for you too. Because you're both coming together trying to do the good work that God is asking us to do through these rooms. I tell you what, I could not have the life that I have today if it weren't for AA. I really couldn't. I don't know another place out there where I could have found the tools to use to be the person that I am today. People respect me today. People trust me today. Oh my God. My children have forgiven me today for the things that I did to them. I didn't come in here till I was in my 40s. I've done a lot of harm to my kids. And they are so proud of me these days. And I look back on that, and that I could never have done by myself. And personally, I could never have done that without AA. Thanks.
Thank you. Since we're running short on time, I won't go but so much into this. The first part of this was, to me, is just about kind of, you know, when I read this part, I'm thinking, oh yeah, now I'm going to talk about sex, right? Because when I was drinking, I'm like most men drinking, that's all I think about is getting laid. But having said all that, really, this dismisses all of that, because the real thing is what's going on in my mind. So all this stuff about extremes and pepper diets and lust and all that stuff, that's all stuff out there, right? The real thing about this is that we're not going to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. And I think that's an important thing to remember at all times, that I'm not the judge of what you do, I'm not even the judge of what I did. I am responsible for myself today. So then it says, what can we do about them? First it says, we all have sex problems, right? We all do. We would hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about it? So now we get the chance to go to the infinite, because that's where it is. Even though you don't like it, you know, the ugliest part of your body is your mind. Thank you.
All right, this reading is also on page 69. We reviewed our conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
And this still is an important area. You don't want to gloss over it, but on the other hand, you've got to be able to look at it as honestly as you can. Honestly, when I took my first four-step, it was rather pathetic. I mean, I wrote some things down, but there really wasn't a lot of soul searching that went along with that, I have to say. So if you come up with a page full of junk, go see your sponsor. It's going to be okay. You're still on the road. My sponsor actually burnt my, she said, we're just going to burn this. And I think it's because it was really quite pathetic. But you know what? You have to be where you're at. And if you're not able to get very deep into this in the very beginning, and sex can be one of those tough ones to get into, probably that's double entendre, but it's the kind of thing that you want to at least get started. Say something, write something down, try to be as honest as you can. And then you're gonna talk it over with your sponsor, and you're gonna be thinking about it. What this step does, it's the beginning of opening up yourself, outside of yourself, and delving into those parts. I don't know about the rest of you, but I covered up so much stuff over the years. I just did. Closed the door on it, shame, guilt, whatever it was that was, I just felt that I'd done wrong. I would never talk about that to anybody. And then we come in these rooms and they're asking us, well, let's write all this stuff down. I don't know about the rest of you, but it probably isn't going to come out all just beautiful and wonderful the very first time. Get something down on paper. Go talk with your sponsor about this and trust that God's going to work on this with you, with your sponsor, and you're going to come out of this no matter how deeply you got into your discussion about sex, your discussion about fear. No matter how deeply you got into it, it's a start. It's more than you were doing when you're out there drinking. You weren't even close to that. So give yourself credit afterwards that you showed up and did this. Lots and lots of people come in these rooms and they never do this. And I don't know what their sobriety is like, but I wouldn't want to trade what I've got today. So whether it's a pathetic fourth step writing down or not, doesn't matter. Get started with it. And then you can move on and you can begin putting this into practice in your life. Thanks.
Thank you. Very quickly, on page 69, where it talks about selfish, dishonest, considerate. Those are the nine questions for relationships that I learned how to ask myself, not only of my late relationships with women, but with people in general. Because I'll take some of this stuff, I'll go to work and I'll arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness, and I don't even know I've done that. I look at where I'm at fault. Where have I made mistakes? What have I done wrong? And I got to look at it, sit down, and write about it. So I'll just go with this. That'll be all I'll say about this. Thank you.
Thanks.
It's really a good inventory for relationships.
I think I'll just group the last two readings together, and you guys can take it from there. All right. On page 69 also, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. And the last reading on page 70, to sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has locked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
And I think that's a very important thing to think about. It really is beginning to step outside of yourself, thinking about somebody else, whether it's in a sexual situation, whether it's just in a normal, any other situation, where we begin to let go of that total self-centeredness that we get into when we are in the throes of our addiction. That's the best part of our addiction, isn't it? I mean, we don't have to think about another fool in this life. We just think about ourselves and we just enjoy the heck until we don't enjoy the heck out of it anymore. There's a reason why we're in these rooms. It's not so much fun like it used to be before. Some reason has brought us all into these rooms, into these chairs. One day, and I don't know when your day was, but one day you come to and you go, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I can't stop and I don't want to stop. And you're just in that quandary of what to do. This four-step, and especially sexual situations, learn to care about a partner, learn to talk to one another. These are all parts of learning to become a normal human being. A lot of normal people do that without having to think about it. We sometimes have to think about being these nice people, asking somebody what they think, treating somebody the way we'd like to be treated. I had to relearn all of those things after I sobered up. It did not happen to me overnight. I really believe that the sooner you, I think within your first year, this is my opinion, not AA's, I guess. I think that it's important, if you can, in your first year of sobriety, to at least get started on this. The sooner you get started, the better. That does not mean that you're going to grasp all of it right in the beginning. Don't even expect to. This is just, this section alone is a lot of stuff to get a handle on. Just that you're willing to begin to change, that you're beginning to come out of your self-centeredness and reach out for someone else. Think about somebody else. That's the beginning. That's the beginning. And then we turn around and we find it. We practice it here in AA by helping other alcoholics. So even if you've been sober a week, you can see a new person come in, and if they identify themselves, you can go up after the meeting and say, how you doing? You got a week on them. You know, I mean, we can learn to help each other, and this is where we practice, is in here. And then when we go outside into that real world, there's some heavy practice too. It isn't always going to work. All of this stuff that we're going to be doing, it isn't going to work for everybody. Do the best that you can. That's all you can ask. We're not perfect people. We're imperfect people, but so is, the truth is, so is everybody else. We do what we can here. And by being honest, the more honest that we are, the better that we're going to make the most of this program. Thanks.
Thank you. As quickly as I can, which is going to be lightning fast. This line, I try to look at this like a relationship inventory rather than a sex inventory. I think that's kind of, throws me off. So this is the way I like to live my life. First of all, it says, that being so, if you've done all this inventory, you've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. People don't want to do that. That's a hard thing to do. So what am I supposed to do about that? Well, we earnestly pray for the right ideal. We're not coming up with our own ideal. We're asking God to give us that ideal. And that ideal, how many people here, I had people say this to me. My sex ideal came true. She walked into my life and it was wonderful. And I thought, no. She's not the ideal. You got to have it in your own head, how you're going to treat people. That's what it's about. It has nothing to do with the other person. It has everything to do with how are you going to treat other people. So we ask God to do that. And whatever that ideal is, we ask to be willing to grow for it. You're not going to get to it every time. I love this. I avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Because I get a lot of hysterical thinking and I get a lot of hysterical advice too. I pray for the right ideal at all times. And the most important thing is that if doing this other stuff doesn't work, like it says in how it says working with others, this works when all other things fail. So that implies you do the first thing first, which is inventory, prayer, call your sponsor, try to get to, and then if it doesn't work, then you throw yourself the harder into helping others. Because that's why we're really here anyway. And that takes my mind off the problem. Just for a while, it's a management tool until you can really get down and find out really what's going on, right? Because it's really about me trying to get sober in a right relationship with God that I can then turn around and pass that along to other people. How did I do that? This is how I did it. This is what I learned. And you can do it too. Let me show you. Boom. But sometimes none of that stuff works, and so you got to go help somebody. You got to call somebody on the phone. You got to do something different. And having said all that, I love dictionary words. So I pulled the word impurious, and it means partly what this means is intensely compelling and urgent, right? That's what it means in this thing. But listen to these other definitions. So if I have an impurious urge when it comes to sex, it means befitting or characteristic of one of eminent rank or attachment. So I think that I should be getting this sex because of my superior rank or something that I've done in my life, that this is my reward. I've created a little, I'm the big I am. Marked by arrogant assurance, domineering. So these are all indications that when I start demanding that I get my way with other people, this is the imperious urge. It doesn't mean just, it doesn't mean just trying to get what I want. Compelling, intense compelling. It also means domineering, and it means I deserve what I'm trying to get. And the only thing we deserve is try to help other people. And that's the best I can do. And I tell you what, that's a wonderful thing to do. So anyway, there's a lot more in there, but we don't have time. Thanks.
Thank you both. All right. We will now pass the seventh tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements? None.
That's unusual.
All right. I know that there's one right here. On Tuesday, October 29th, Westside Young and Sober, along with Norfolk District 14, is having a Get Into Service workshop. It's a potluck at 6:30, and the panel of speakers at 7:30, and they're Kate A., Pete W., and David H. And that is Tuesday, October 29th, at Trinity Presbyterian Church, 1600 Colonial Avenue, right up the street from here. All are welcome.
Alcoholic David.
Hi, David.
If you're a member of this home group or thinking about joining this home group, we have a steering committee in this room meeting next Monday at 5:30. And this weekend is the Virginia Area Assembly, which starts on Friday night. It's open to all AAs, not just GSRs. And that is Holiday Inn, Greenwich Road, kind of near Newtown and the expressway. Right? Mm-hmm. It's going on Friday night, Saturday, Sunday morning, workshops, etc.
And also, registration starts at 5. And there is a new GSR workshop. But if you want to get involved in any type of service, kind of lead into our service workshop on the 29th. It's a good place to start at 6 p.m. on Friday night. And also, there will be a speaker from GSO on Saturday evening. And it should be rather interesting. And if you want to know who it is, you should probably come to find out.
It's totally free as well.
Yes.
Going on all weekend.
Open
all weekend.
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic. This coming Saturday, the AA meeting that normally meets over Cornerstone is going to be held in the old fellowship hall here at the church. Is that right? Okay. So they're asking us to park and enter through the tower doors in the main parking lot. So just remember, Cornerstone this Saturday night we'll be meeting here. The church has something in the house where we normally meet.
All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Right. Thank you. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Oh, wow. Nice. Hi, welcome.
Literature available right here. Please see a home group member after the meeting if you would like to buy a book. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here in this same spot at this same table after the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel. Thanks to all who participated. Ugh. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. If you hit the train tracks, you've gone too far. And do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Grant, take
I'm
it.
Grant, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Grant.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
Looks like we have to make a big circle. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.